Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. In just a moment, all things political with one of our most articulate and knowledgeable guests, Julian Zelizer, will be starting with the incredible demonstrations, not just in New York, but all over this country and in the world. What in the world does it mean? The Occupy Wall Street events, and I'm sure Julian will have a lot to say about those. It is our Half the Time pledge drive at Wisconsin Public Radio. We are entering our last 10 hours and the last 2 hours for us to ask you to contribute to this program and particularly to all things political. We're asking for your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and Chrissy Peace, one of the producers of this fine program, is joining me in our Milwaukee studios. Hello, Chrissy.
Good morning, Kathleen. How are you?
Well, you know, the Brewers lost, but it was a good run, and I had to make mention it was a good series.
It really
was. It was a really good season. We got so excited, and it would be nice to be going to the World Series, but, you know,
right now the Cardinals were the better team.
You got it.
We'll just see.
All right.
Let's see what we can do with these last couple of hours in our Half the Time pledge drive. Your gift of a dollar a week or, hey, a dollar a day, whatever amount is comfortable for you, it's all it takes to make this Half the Time drive a success. Like Lisa from Madison says, stop putting it off now. I know I, for one, enjoy the shorter pledge drive. Don't you? Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Last hour, the goal was 100 pledges, and we came pretty darn close, Chrissy. How many?
96.
Wonderful. It was a really good hour. Thank you for those pledges. Our goal this hour, as we're nearing the end of this drive, everybody, is 80 pledges this hour. And your gift, of course, will ensure that all of the programs you enjoy will be here every day on Wisconsin Public Radio.
And because we're trying to accomplish this drive in just half the time of a normal fall drive, we're asking you not to delay. These goals are bigger than usual because we have fewer days to ask for your support. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And it is the last day of our Half the Time pledge drive. It ends at 7 o'clock tonight. That's good news. It'll be better news if we can reach our goal of 80 callers this hour, your financial support during this hour. And it's our All Things Political. We do this every week at 9 o'clock. We've had fabulous guests on this show, and it's a pleasure and honor to speak politics with you every week because you're good thinkers. When we meet the overall goal for this drive, we will be better able, of course, to plan for our future.
And it's your financial gift that does it. It allows us to bring you the programs you rely on, like All Things Political every Monday. Take a moment to think about how much Wisconsin Public Radio is worth to you. Then please pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Supporting Wisconsin Public Radio right now is a great thing to do with 2 minutes of your time. 2 minutes that will be vitally important to our future. Hey, you may as well pledge. It just takes 2 minutes, and it really is important. All you have to do is give us your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay, whether you call or you can pledge online. We will keep your information completely safe. We don't share it with any other organization.
And please know that your gift will turn into the stories and programs that keep you connected to the world. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
In just a moment, we'll be talking to guest Julian Zelizer, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. I love him as a guest. I keep thinking I'm in his class at Princeton University, which I never got a chance to attend. And what a professor he would be. He really knows his presidential history, and he's very up on everything that's happening moment by moment. He's a marvelous guest, and we have him on and discussions like All Things Political because of your financial support. Please give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You can join your fellow listeners and Wisconsin Public Radio in keeping Pledge Drive short. Join the community in supporting our Half the Time Pledge Drive. It's exciting to cut a 12-day drive down to 6.
Yep.
And it works only when you donate. Give now, please, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's half the time. This is it. 10 hours and the baby is over, so it's time to pledge. If you've never given before, think about the fact that WPR was here for you because someone else took that step from being a listener to being a contributor. And today, we are asking you to take that step, to join other members by making a contribution of your own.
And your gift ensures that programs such as this one, All Things Political, they're available for you and also for the next person to discover. So give right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're still looking for 77 more pledges in the next... How many minutes, Chrissy? I'm bad at that.
About 50.
That. 50, thank you. I guess that wasn't too hard. And think about the fact that here we are talking politics. We do it together every Monday. It's really so important. We've been through a lot together, you know, presidential elections and economic news and you name it. And we all think about it, contemplate it with guests who guide us. Help us, please, at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And guys, it's the last day of our Half the Time Pledge Drive. For it to end successfully at 7 o'clock tonight, we need to make up some ground right now. We have a goal of 80 pledges this hour. So far, we have 4. We can do it. Your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is crucial. And a friend from Onalaska, I like this comment, Kathleen, says, I moved to Wisconsin 18 years ago, and I'm so glad I did. Otherwise, I would never have known about WPR and these great shows like Kathleen Dunn. Thanks for not only entertaining me, but educating me as well. If you feel like that person, call now, 888-202-2552.
Thank you, Chrissy, very much. Thanks, everybody, for all of your pledges. Please help us reach our goal of 80 pledges this hour, particularly for this show. It's one we love to do. We all love politics here, Chrissy and Rhonda and I, and they really give us some fabulous guests, like the guest we're going to speak with right now, Julian Zelizer, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. He is a well-known figure. He is the author and editor of all kinds of books that examine U.S. political leaders, policies, and institutions since the New Deal. His most recent books are Jimmy Carter, Conservatives in Power, The Reagan Years, 81 to 89, Arsenal of Democracy, The Politics of National Security from World War II to the War on Terrorism, and The Presidency of George W. Bush, A First Historical Assessment. Next year, he will publish his newest book, Governing America, The Revival of Political History. He is a prolific writer, writing a weekly column for CNN.com. He has published over 200 op-eds. He has also published in Newsweek, Politico, The New York Times, The Washington Post, The Daily Beast, The Huffington Post, The Los Angeles Times, The Boston Globe, and The American Prospect. Professor Julian Zelizer, always a pleasure to speak with you. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hi. I want to start with Wall Street because the demonstrations were all over this country and all over the world, and I'm interested in what you would say to this. This was a comment in the Sunday Dialogue section of the New York Times, which you probably saw, from somebody in Franklin, Tennessee, Lucian, who said, "The day President Obama stands up, preferably among the protesters on Wall Street, and states unequivocally that he counts himself among the 99%, will be the day he ensures his reelection." Do you have the same take or a different one?
I think it's more difficult than that. I mean, I think there is some interest in the White House in putting themselves next to this movement and saying that they are on the same page with these issues. But the reality is the record of the administration is very different than the kinds of ideas that the protest wants. He's been a centrist Democrat. He hasn't really tried to radically tame Wall Street. That's not who he is or what he's about. And the danger of becoming too much part of the movement is that in a campaign, they could make him into, you know, Al Gore in 2000, meaning someone who seemed to be saying things that were not following what their actual record was. So I think it's a difficult move for him to do. And they're also worried about what direction the movement takes. I mean, the thing about political movements is you can't control them, and the White House is nervous about what images emerge tomorrow on tomorrow's papers or what's said by a protester and how that will be connected to the White House.
How do you explain how enormous these protests are, if not in numbers, then in just the location of them all over the world, all over this country?
It is very surprising, but I think what we're seeing is a global response that started as a national and now global to the kind of economic problems that are, you know, confronting people all over the place. And some of the things that bother members of the Tea Party bother members of Occupy Wall Street, growing inequality in America, the power of Wall Street financial and business interests, and the seeming inability or unwillingness of government to deal with these issues. And again, Tea Party activists take a very different approach to how to solve this. But I think it's the same kind of economic anxiety that people are living through. It's this laggard recovery where jobs are just not there, governments are cutting key benefits, and I think that's the motivation behind a lot of these movements.
And this inability, inexplicable inability, but maybe you can explain it to us, of government to respond to what people need. They need to be able to pay off student loans. They need jobs, and the government seems inept.
It does, and there's different reasons. Obviously, in the United States, I do think there's at least a perception that the intense polarization, where there is no interest in either party in reaching some kind of compromise on issues such as jobs programs, makes the government just seem ineffective. It's not moving. It's not doing anything other than fighting, with each other. And in other countries, I think the sense is that the overwhelming problem of the deficit is just forcing governments into one direction, cut, 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 and there's not really an option on the table to do something else. So that's a different kind of problem, but it's the same response that government won't be there for sure, and it's unclear who's going to come to, who's Superman, and I don't think anyone sees Superman right now.
Mm-hmm. The president not getting anywhere with Congress on his jobs plan, according to the news from NPR at the top of the hour. He is going to now promote individual pieces of the plan. What should he promote? What stands a chance of passage?
Well, usually tax cuts pass. And so whether it's the payroll tax deduction or tax incentives for small businesses, those are the kinds of programs that are going to have the greatest chance, because those are ideas that many of them started with Republicans. And part of what Obama did with the package was to take Republican ideas and promote them as his own and then tie them to other policies that he wanted. He's going to drop the other policies, and I think he's going to push for those. I'm not sure they'll pass anyway. I think the Republicans right now feel confident. They feel the White House is theirs to take. And unfortunately, the way Congress can work is that obstruction then becomes the preferred means of doing business. And I'm not sure they want to give him anything right now.
And yet the Republicans are somehow going to have to take charge of the news cycle. If you have every newscast starting with protests that are taking place all over the world, you have to counter that somehow, don't you? You have to offer something.
They could. I mean, one strategy is to offer what their response is. The other is to either let that news die out eventually, that the idea is after a month or two, the news cycle will change, which it does, and then those issues won't be something they have to respond to, or hope that the movement takes a direction that is favorable to them. So when there's clashes with the police in New York, that's the image a Republican is going to talk about, and that this becomes a lawless scene of disorder, much like the 1960s, when protests that started with a focus on issues, with a focus on democracy and democratic change, turned more toward violence and chaos. And I would suspect there's many Republicans thinking that's going to happen here. The other thing is, unlike the Tea Party, Occupy Wall Street still doesn't have a strong organizational connection to the Democratic Party and even to the unions yet. And so unless they can do that, there's a chance this will fizzle after time. And so the Republicans are banking on that.
Mm-hmm. In your piece recently for CNN, you talk about the president's reelection campaign and the direction he needs to go, saying at some level the president needs to explain to voters what he has done and how he has strengthened the nation, even in difficult economic times. He can't ignore his own record. What's in his record that's worth boasting about?
Well, he's going to have to explain health care, and especially now when the administration has just given up on part of the program. I think the parts that exist, the parts that can still fully be enacted, the expansion of insurance to millions of Americans, a system that, if put into effect, can lower the cost of premiums, he has to boast about it, not run from it. The Republicans will criticize it a lot, and he's going to have to explain why it still is good for the future of the nation, why it's economical, and why it's morally right. And I think that's important. I think the stimulus bill, which, you know, it's hard to defend when jobless rates are so high, even for many supporters, is a level of frustration. He still has to talk about what that did. And the answer had been, you know, the need for another stimulus, not less stimulus. But he has to show what he did for the auto industry or what he did to stop a crisis from spiraling out of control. Unless he makes those kinds of explanations, no one's going to do it for him. And so I think it's going to be important.
Professor Julian Zelizer is our guest for this week's All Things Political, and we'll welcome your phone calls. Our lines are all filled. Great. Our number, there will be lines open eventually, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We're also in our Half the Time pledge drive. Today is the last day for it, so we need to just move ahead. If you enjoy these kinds of conversations on Monday, I sure do. It's one of my favorite hours of the week. Please call with your pledge, 888-202-2552. We need 67 pledges this hour to feel good about the way the pledge drive is going on its last day. I'm Kathleen Dunn. To your calls in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. To your calls now, starting with Dave in Menominee. Hi, Dave.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to bring up Americans for Prosperity. I learned this weekend that Herman Cain, the Republican, one of the candidates who's now surging a bit, has a background in a relationship with the Koch brothers. In 2005 and 2006, he traveled the country for the Koch brothers, for Americans for Prosperity, and at that time he met a Wisconsin Republican named Mark Block, who was a state's chapter leader for Americans for Prosperity. And now he's Cain's campaign manager. It turns out that he has a big connection with the Koch brothers. So I just wanted to get thoughts from your guest on that topic.
All right, Professor?
Yeah, I saw that story, and that connection has clearly emerged, and it seems plausible. I'm not sure why it's so surprising, meaning this is an organization, and the brothers, who are now famous for backing conservative causes, especially deregulation, tax cuts, economic-focused issues, have a connection to Cain, who is clearly promoting some of those ideas. And my guess is the Americans for Prosperity would be in favor of some of the other candidates as well. This has been, you know, a very tightly orchestrated and aggressive organization that's been promoting conservatism in the last few years and very effectively. And I'm not sure it means Cain is going to win. I'm not sure what it means if you're a supporter of Cain about his candidacy. I think you could be comfortable with the fact they support him. And I do think it shows, though, again, going back to earlier in our conversation, that the Tea Party, one of the reasons they've been effective is they have kind of financial backers and organizational support like the Americans for Prosperity, tying them to the Republican Party. And that makes a movement very effective. I'm not sure what it will do to Cain's candidacy, though. I think there's other reasons it will probably peter out.
But why is it doing so well right now, Cain's candidacy?
Well, part of it is just we've had many other people have done well. Rick Perry did well for a while, and so did Michelle Bachmann. And I think, you know, the way the media works right now, pre-primaries, pre-caucuses, is to find something fresh and find something new. And he's certainly an interesting character. And so, you know, he now has the spotlight. And then the second reason people will talk about is there some discomfort with Mitt Romney? And that might be the case, but the field is still open. So people want a good story, and right now he's that good story, and we'll see once he gets inspected closely if people are still so thrilled. Again, we haven't had a single caucus or primary right now, so what we're talking about is where the news shifts rather than where voters shift. Mm.
People like a good story. They could use a good reality, too.
Exactly.
Yeah. Jim in Milwaukee. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi. I encourage people to grab a piece of paper because words have power, and words can network the feelings of victims of conservative abuse and neglect. For example, in mortgages and stock losses, the feelings might be con, manipulated, betrayed, sold out, jobless men, humbled and humiliated, desperate, abandoned, ignored, obstructed and blocked. And the families of the unemployed would be shocked and destitute and frightened and fearful and hopeless and lost and scared. And finally, the victims of the conservative philosophy of deregulating the environment, life-threatened, disabled, poisoned, polluted. Words have power, and people need to network the words and the feelings of the victims of conservative abuse.
Professor Zelizer.
Fair points, and I think that statement captures some of what we're hearing in the protest. There'll be a debate over what is the source of the various problems. Is it conservative abuse? Is it Democratic policies? Does it have nothing to do with politics really right now? Is it the way the economy has moved globally and the jobs have shifted out of our country? And it's hard to figure out what the response is. That's an open debate, and it will continue to be an open debate. But the frustrations, I think, are again driving both movements, right and left. And I think there are a lot of Americans right now who feel this sense of frustration and real insecurity. I mean, a lot of political scientists have been measuring economic security within the middle class and tracing how over the last two or three decades it's declined. A lot of the key supports that people had, secure health care benefits and various government supports, have just been going away. And so that's what people are responding to.
Thanks, Jim. Mike in South Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. I call in periodically because I can't keep myself from sharing my frustration. I like your show, but quite frankly, sometimes I believe you and your guests are naive. I have been predicting these mass demonstrations for the better part of a year. I went to school in Madison in the 60s and also San Francisco, Berkeley. And I saw things there, and I sense the same thing now. The problem is not Herman Cain. The problem is Barack Obama. Barack Obama had a chance to reform Wall Street. He appointed Larry Summers, one of the key architects of the destruction of the Glass-Steagall Act. He had a majority in the Senate and the Congress to restore Glass-Steagall. He had Elizabeth Warren, who sounded the call for the populace of this country, and he didn't have the guts to appoint her, knowing that she would meet stiff challenges. Barack Obama needs to be challenged in the Democratic primary. My prediction is these demonstrations will increase. What you saw in Madison in the spring, you will see around the country, and unfortunately, I think they will become violent. Look at 1915, 1917 in the Soviet Union. Look at 1789 in France. That's where we're heading, folks. Let's not be naive in the ivory towers of Princeton. That's my comment.
Oh, I don't think this guest is naive. I don't think anybody here is naive about this. But Professor Zelizer,
yeah, that's fine. I think earlier there's a lot of people who are wondering what happens to President Obama and these protests. That's part of what the caller was talking about.
Right.
And I think it's important to remember a lot of the protest is against Barack Obama, not just against conservatism. And that's why, this could be a problem for the president. It could not stimulate support for him, but stimulate Democratic or liberal opposition or a third-party candidate against him. And the White House is very aware of this, and they're talking about limits of government policy that took place not under President Bush, but under President Obama. And again, very similar to the 1960s, where the left ended up revolting against the Democrats and became much more focused on the sense of betrayal from the Democratic Party than they were angry about where Republicans and conservatives were. You know, Republicans are what Republicans are in the mind of some protesters. And what really frustrates them is a president who once seemed to be a candidate of change doesn't look that way anymore. And then the earlier point, could you see this coming? You know, you can always see protests coming. Any point in American history, there are activists, there is frustration. But what's remarkable are those moments when it turns into something like this. It turns into something bigger. People actually come out and you know, on a sustained basis, carry through with the protest. And so those are always hard moments to predict. You always can see the signs. That's not what we're looking for. We're looking for when the signs turn into something. And again, that's not easy to see when it's going to happen.
We'll talk more. Professor Salazar wrote a recent piece about third-party candidates. What about a third-party challenge? What about a challenge to the president? We'll talk more about that in a moment. This is listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. It's our All Things Political Hour, which you hear every Monday at this time. Chrissy Pease, producer of this program, along with Rhonda Fanning, is with me in our Milwaukee studios. We have just 10 hours left in this Half the Time pledge drive to raise the money in support of the programs that you value on Wisconsin Public Radio.
And this is the last day of this pledge drive, as Kathleen Dowden said, so it's coming to an end. The success of this drive depends on you. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're looking for how many?
61.
61 more pledges in the next 25 minutes. And we can do this. Pledges like yours keep us on track to support the programs that you count on. They also help us reduce on-air fundraising, which has been a big deal. Big deal half the time. And we need to get the pledges to make this Half the Time drive a success. Thank you if you've already given. If not, please give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we love hearing from you. And we heard from one donor who said, I'm a better mom, a better sister, a better employee, and a better person because of the WPR experience. Another donor stated simply, WPR is as important to me as my morning coffee.
All right. If WPR makes you a better person or is an important daily ritual in your life, join your fellow listeners in supporting it. Your donation makes WPR possible at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And there are so many important and interesting issues that we talk about on the Ideas Network. So many great guests, past All Things Political guests. We've had Clarence Page, Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie, Glenn Thrush, Politico's White House correspondent, of course, Professor Salazar we're having right now. And you rely on these discussions with these guests on Wisconsin Public Radio. That's why your gift during our Half the Time pledge drive is so important.
We've cut this drive to half its normal length, 12 days down to 6. And when it works, we all win. We get the funds that we need to keep the discussions going in the months to come, and you get more of your favorite programs. So make this Half the Time drive a success with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
As you know, Wisconsin Public Radio keeps you informed and entertained every day. You get value from this program, Kathleen Dunn and All Things Political, but also Joy Cardine in the morning, Veronica Rickard on Fridays, Larry Mueller in the afternoon, so many shows and many others you've come to rely on.
WPR gives you a window on the world really like no other. It's a very unique broadcasting service. Support the exciting mix of programs that you enjoy on this station with your contributions. Again, you can do online, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Think about this. If you listen to WPR on your way to work and on your way home every day, in an hour or two each weekend, you're listening more than 700 hours a year.
Are you serious? 700 hours a year?
I wasn't a math major, but
That's a lot of hours. Today, if you have never given before, we're asking you to consider a first-time gift of $5 a month. $5 a month for hundreds of hours of listening. That makes WPR one of the best information and entertainment bargains that you will find anywhere. Give now, WPR.org, or the number again, 888-202-2552.
And these goals are so important. We have an hourly goal this hour of 80. We need 58 more. We are chugging along. Help us out now, please. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
The goal is particularly important, Chrissy, because today is the last day of this Half the Time Pledge Drive. For it to end successfully at 7 o'clock tonight, we need to make up some ground right now. So your pledge is crucial, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thanks very much, Ms. Chrissy. Thanks to Rhonda as well for the superb guests that we have each and every day, like Professor Julian Zelizer, who's our All Things Political guest this hour, Professor of History and Public Affairs at Princeton University. We go to another phone call, Gary in Fitchburg. Hi, Gary.
Hi. A couple observations about Mr. Obama. I think Obama was a Trojan horse put in by the Wall Street elite to downgrade and destroy the progressive movement. He's done a pretty good job of it, witnessing the congressional elections in 2010. I think one of the few chances he has to be elected again would be to dump Biden and choose Hillary Clinton. I think that would set Hillary up for 2016. It would most likely help Obama win back some of the disaffected Democrats that know he's a kind of a wolf in sheep's clothing. Personally, I would not vote for Obama again unless Hillary is on the ticket. I do not trust him. I don't like him. I think he's a Wall Street shoe-shine boy, and it's time for a third party.
Professor.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, Hillary Clinton is often seen that way, and in fact, that was part of the way in which President Obama won, by showing he would be for a different set kind of economic policy, less centrist than the Clinton legacy was. So just interesting to hear that Hillary Clinton now has some support on the left. I don't think there's any evidence that's what Barack Obama was about. You know, I do think from the start he was in fact more moderate than many of his supporters hoped for. He's also someone who faced very difficult political obstacles and a revived and robust conservative movement. And, you know, the final question, which historians will wrestle with and voters, is his leadership skills. It might be he was not so skilled when the campaign ended and when governing started. And he was overtaken by events. He was overtaken by his opposition. None of that suggests, and I don't think the evidence is there, he's somehow, he's backed by Wall Street, somehow meant to subvert progressivism. I think sometimes the explanations are simpler and less conspiratorial.
Mm. And would you agree with Susskind's assessment in his book that Obama had a tip that this Wall Street thing was going to be incredibly serious in result perhaps in a complete unraveling of the economic system in this country, and he was new on the job. He didn't know exactly what to do, so he relied on people like Geithner and Summers, who had been there before. And maybe he should have gone elsewhere for his advice.
Well, there's something to that. It's a compelling story that he tells. There's problems with it. There's mistakes. But overall, you know, it does give the impression of the White House, where the president was not fully in charge and surrounded himself with powerful advisors who took advantage of that and who moved financial and economic policy in one direction where it might have been better to go in a different direction. You know, and that raises questions about his leadership, about the kinds of policies that dominated the White House early on. Again, the question is, was there support, though, for something bolder? President Obama would respond, this is probably the best we can get. The second issue raised by Susskind is health care and the big decision which the president, by all accounts, including Jonathan Alter, has written about. Really, it was the president who pushed to keep that up first. And there were advisors, including Rahm Emanuel, who says we can't do that right now for budgetary reasons, for political reasons. And I think that will be one of the great debates about the early year of his presidency. Should he have waited and put everything into a more aggressive economic policy? And would that have set him up differently in terms of his political standing? And obviously, most important, would it have helped the economy more effectively?
We go next. Thanks, Gary, for your interesting call. Willem in Colfax, hi.
Hi, I had a comment. You know, I attended the protests in Madison and how peacefulness and nonviolence were really stressed, and I think that's always the best way for any protest movement to proceed. And your comment about the I'm old enough to have participated in demonstrations in the 60s, and I remember that your comment about how they turned violent was, I think the most violent incidents in the protests were the 1968 Democratic Convention, when it was shown that many of the joke was there were half of the people were FBI agents, and it turned out that in later investigations it was really called a police riot. So, and even in our instance with our governor, in the fake call with the Koch brother, had said that, well, they thought about maybe planting troublemakers. So that's more my concern, is that that the government or the establishment's reaction to this would be to, you know, plant people to start violent behavior rather than the legitimate protests of the people, who I think are mostly, you know, nonviolent and see the how, you know, what a good policy that is to be nonviolent, because, you know, then the government has to seem like they're the aggressor.
Julian.
I think, you know, most protesters tend to be nonviolent. That's true. What happens is, if a few aren't, though, that's what will capture the media attention, and that's often how opponents will then undermine a movement which is correctly nonviolent, and that's an accurate portrayal. That happened in the 60s. You know, part of it was the 68 convention. It wasn't only undercover cops that engaged in them. There were other protests where violence occurred, and where there's some violence. All you need is one violent protester. And especially in today's media, that image can then be carried everywhere, and it then defines the movement, even if that's not a legitimate way to define a movement. So that's the danger, I think, the Occupy Wall Street faces, and that's why the organizers are so insistent on making sure that people remember to take care in how they appear, in how they interact. Will the government try to subvert the movement? I don't know. That has happened before. It's not simply a theory that governments, both Republican and Democrat, try to get into movements and try to create all kinds of chaos. But the movement itself has to be careful. And again, in this media age, when one image can be so powerful and transmitted so quickly on YouTube, on the Internet, I think, you know, a lot of the people on the ground and a lot of Democrats who are sympathetic are watching with a nervous eye that one person doesn't end up making a bigger movement not legitimate. And the Tea Party had the same complaint, you remember. There were some instances of racist signs and some, you know, more violent encounters with their opponents. And they said, you know, generally that's not what the Tea Party is about. And the media will carry, you know, this one image, this one sign, rather than what the rest of us are about. So this is just part of movement politics, and it's a strategic challenge that they face.
Well, and it is true. If you read the different media outlets' interpretation of the events, if you're considered a conservative media outlet, that is the way you're reporting that these days. So many arrests. These are the demonstrators in clashes with the police, you know, and the group of anarchists. If you're listening to or watching another media outlet, there is a concentration on greed and how much the upper 1% is making. It's just completely different coverage.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, that's how political news is reported right now. But that just amplifies the danger. There is one set of media out there, and again, the blogosphere is its own world, who are ready to report on this in this particular way, and they already are doing so. So that's a political problem that the supporters face, and any Democrats who want to join in, they have to be nervous about that.
Julian Zelizer is our guest, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton. He writes widely. He analyzes what's going on in the world politically for CNN.com. He publishes op-ed pieces in all kinds of publications. He's also a presidential historian. He has written books on Jimmy Carter, on Ronald Reagan, on George W. Bush, and also he has written books on national security from World War II to the war on terrorism. More phone calls momentarily. 800-486-8655 is the number. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Remember, it's half the time pledge drive. It ends tonight at 7, so it's really crucial that you make your pledge right now so we can keep doing half the time pledge drives, which really beats the alternative. The number is 888-202-2552. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we go to Ray in Milwaukee. Hi, Ray.
Yeah, I just want to follow up on a couple of the last calls. If Mr. Obama is our only choice on the left in voting, we really have no choice. And what we do need is a third party or a serious challenge to Mr. Obama and the Democratic. We should have a primary, and maybe that's what this thing with Occupy Wall Street could eventually push the country into.
We haven't gotten to the third party. What do you think about that, Julian?
It could. I think many Democrats and many liberals don't want to do anything to undermine an already weak president, and they are more concerned about a Republican occupying the White House, even though much of their frustration is with President Obama, than they are with a second Obama term. The bigger issue is who would that candidate be? And Howard Dean, who was the obvious choice for a while, has been very hesitant about getting into this, and now he's said he won't do it. So I do think the movement has the potential to generate some kind of a third-party challenge, but they need a challenger. They need a candidate. And it's unclear they have someone who could really do well, not simply be a marginal figure who expresses some of the concerns, but poses a real Ted Kennedy-like challenge, meaning how Ted Kennedy challenged Jimmy Carter and forced him to deal with certain issues in the coming months.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Kate in Milwaukee. Hi, Kate.
Hi. Whether I'm listening to television, talking heads, or on the radio, it's very easy for people to rip Obama, but I'd like to, I've always wanted to ask, well, tell me where they think, where the country and people that are so dissatisfied with Obama, where do they think we'd be today if we had continued with Republicans? If Obama hasn't satisfied him with anything that he's accomplished, he certainly has kept us from going over the edge so far.
Julian.
Well, you know, that's going to be the administration's argument. And, you know, the administration's argument will be, we did well, we did the best that we can do, and you certainly wouldn't have this much if a Republican is in a White House, and you'll have a worse future if it's President Romney or President Perry or President Kaine. But still, you know, that's a little like the Mitt Romney problem. You don't want to be the president by default. And I think the president will ultimately have to make a more compelling case, because if a lot of the left either has a third party or doesn't show up and they don't organize, you know, in a close race, which is clearly could be, that's going to hurt. And I believe the Republicans are still better mobilized right now, and they will have a better voting machine than the Democrats might if they can't get some enthusiasm up. So that argument is valid, but I think a president needs a different and more, a bolder approach to win support.
And finally, from my final question to you is, it's Monday. We've had these demonstrations all over the world. They're all over television. People are talking about him. What do you think people in Washington, all the senators and Congress people, are talking about? How are they hashing all of this over today? It's got to be something that's on their minds. What do they do with it? What do they think about it?
Well, the mystery or the absence from the movement is what they want. One of the other things the Tea Party had going for it was they wanted deficit reduction. They talked about deficit reduction.
Mm-hmm.
They insisted on it. So ultimately, that's what Republicans did.
Right.
That's how they were going to calm their own movement. They would focus on that issue. And so I think politicians are watching, they're keeping an eye on it, but it's unclear what they have to do.
So always with black, long hair.
Young and idealistic, Fatima went to join the protest against a curfew in Paris that had been imposed on French Algerians in response to recent killings of 11 French police officers by the Algerian independence movement, the FLN. It had been fighting for 7 years to end French colonial rule in Algeria, but it also carried out many attacks in mainland France in which dozens of police officers were killed. The curfew prompted the FLN to change its tactics. It ordered French-Algerian families to take part in the protest, thinking that the presence of women and children would deter the police from violence. But historian Jean-Luc Ainaudi says that even before the demonstration, the French police were systematically killing Algerians.
À partir du début du mois de septembre, on a commencé à retrouver un nombre grandissant de cadavres.
At the start of September, they started to find a growing number of bodies of Algerians in woods, rivers, canals. Throughout September and the beginning of October, Algerians were rounded up by the police, who took them to the edge of the River Seine, knocked them unconscious, tied their hands, and threw them into the river during the night, always the night.
Jean-Luc Ainaudi has spent years trying to establish the truth. Despite being denied access to the state archives, he published a book on the massacre in 1991, which contained detailed testimony from witnesses and officials at the time. The day after the protest, the authorities said there had been two deaths, but Jean-Luc Ainaudi's research led him to conclude that up to 200 people died on the night of the protest alone, and that many others were killed by the police in the days before the protest and in the days that followed. He describes how a peaceful demonstration in the heart of Paris 50 years ago turned into a massacre.
Dans la soirée, de nombreux Algériens arrivaient vers Paris. En général, ils s'étaient habillés avec leurs habits du dimanche.
Numerous Algerians arrived in Paris in the evening. Generally, they were dressed in their Sunday best to take part in a peaceful and dignified demonstration. The police rounded up large numbers of them and used very serious violence against them. Thousands were taken to detention centers. Despite this, men, women and children took part in peaceful demonstrations without incident on the main boulevards. At a given moment, the police opened fire, killing people. Thousands also took part in another peaceful march to the Neuilly Bridge, where the police also fired, and where the drownings started. They started taking people and throwing them into the River Seine from many bridges in Paris.
It was fear of such violence that had made Fatima's parents.
WPR programs that you love. Make a contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Please give as generously as you can, but please give.
Certainly. At a time when the world is changing at such a fast pace, keeping up is more important and harder than ever. No matter what's going on in your own life or in the news, WPR is always here for you. You can count on us for programs that are both enlightening and entertaining.
And it's really a two-way relationship where you're here when you need us and you step up with the support and also the intelligence. You're a great, great audience. That cannot be overstated. You make it all possible in addition to all the fine people who work here, in addition to the guests. That's how it works. Please give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Now really is the time. Now this is it. This is the time.
And each and every donation to WPR makes a difference, and that includes leadership gifts that make big projects possible. Help WPR with an annual gift at the leadership level of $1,000 or more. Wouldn't that be great, Kathleen?
Yes, it would. Yes,
to set up a leadership pledge, it's easy. You can visit WPR.org or you call 888-202-2552. Thank you in advance for your gift of any amount.
This is the last part of the pledge drive. This was an experiment, and we really hope it's successful so we can do this again. You don't want those really long, long pledge drives. We don't want those really long, long pledge drives. We want pledge drives like today to be, and this whole drive to be, very successful. So please pledge WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Chrissy Pease is with me in our studios. Rhonda Fanning, both of them, producers extraordinaire, is with us. We're here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Maybe your gift is $50. Maybe it's $100. Maybe it's $500 or $1,000. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we are still looking for 45 more pledges. till the end of the hour. We can do it. I know we can count on you. Your pledge right now helps keep this program. You love it. It's all things political, each and every week, Monday, 9 o'clock. It helps this program go strong and helps to keep this drive short. It's 6 days instead of 12.
Right.
Make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Now 44 more pledges to
all
go.
Right.
And, you know, it strikes me, Kathleen, like you said, we have a great audience, and often when I talk to people at the end of the show, it's my job to talk to the guests. They say, wow, what great questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the people we talk to get talked to around the country, mm-hmm. and they don't get the same listener questions that we get at Wisconsin Public Radio. We are counting on you to make a difference. And you know that our hosts are phenomenal. If you remember a couple of weeks ago, John Katz was in studio, obviously.
Kathleen remembers.
he wrote an incredible blog piece about what he called the Kathleen Dunn Experience. And I just want to share a couple of lines with you that made me incredibly proud to work with Kathleen. He says, it is very rare for a writer to talk with someone like Kathleen Dunn. She reads books carefully, asks the most penetrating questions, and grasps the point as well or better than anyone who has interviewed me. At the end, he writes, Kathleen Dunn is very valuable, compassionate, intelligent, perceptive, and I hope she interviews writers for many years. Make that possible. Make the Kathleen Dunn Show possible. Make all your WPR programs possible. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we have such enthusiasm. We have a great team here with Chrissy and Rhonda, and we enjoy working together. As you can probably tell, we take the job seriously. We give you the best possible guests. You know, it really is, when you think about it, it's darned amazing what we do every day, isn't it? So
it's
please,
a gift.
Yeah, it is a gift. Please pledge. It's a short drive. This is it. We've only got a few hours left for this whole thing, so please pledge now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. One final portion, about 10 seconds. Chrissy Pease.
I just want to echo what Beatrice from Oshkosh says. WPR is the only station I listen to. I feel I'm part of the WPR family. So helping the family is what it's all about. I couldn't agree more.
All right. Thank you. You did it. Thanks very much to Chrissy Pease, and thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing and doing on-air production for this show. We had a show in addition to asking for your support with Julian Zelizer. Thanks, everybody, for your pledges. Please keep them coming in. We want to be successful here. 888-202-2552.